less than 1 minute.
Life, do you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get dropped out.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there. We're back in the chair today, back behind the microphone. Feeling a little poorly yesterday and couldn't make it. We hope you'll forgive us for that. But awfully glad to be back with you here today. Always a pleasure to sit in with all of our listeners, whether you be here in the United States or any one of our listeners from around the world. So glad to have all of you with us. And we've got a great show lined up for you today. Got a couple of terrific guests. I know you're going to hear, you're going to like them. I know that. We're coming up at 3:25. We've got Elizabeth De La Vega. She's a former federal prosecutor in Minneapolis and San Jose for 20 years. She's the author of a new book, U.S. versus George W. Bush et al., and that is about impeachment. And our second guest today, another Elizabeth Holtzman. A lot of you have heard from her, heard about her, I'm sure. She's been on Common Dreams lately, done a lot of writing, and she's written a book as well. And she's going to be with us talking about the subject of impeachment also. She was a four-term congressman, former district attorney in Brooklyn, and she was on the panel that was going to impeach Richard M. Nixon. So we've got a couple of great guests for you. They know what they're talking about. And it's going to be interesting. I promise you that. Interesting day for Democrats. Murtha versus Hoyer. I didn't know what to think, how that was going to turn out. My sources told me it was going to be close. My sources were absolutely wrong. It was not close. As I recall, it was somewhere around, 146 to 89, something like that. However, it adds up to 235. Isn't that wonderful? That's how it'll be there. Steny Hoyer is going to be our new majority leader. And I don't know. That was one of those cases there where I like both the guys. They both have a little baggage. As much as I like Jack Murtha, he had a little bit of baggage that I'm sure the Republicans sooner or later would have made hay off of. They've tried to for a number of years against him. I just probably, seeing how the political climate is nowadays, probably would like to have seen a couple of guys up there who were fresh-faced and squeaky clean, but that's not how it goes for that position. Usually it's got to be somebody that's got an in with a lot of congressmen that can round up votes, count votes, be a person that can go out and spread the speaker's message to other people and cajole and argue and all that sort of thing. So, interesting. That's taking place today already. And of course, Nancy Pelosi is officially our new Speaker of the House. She was unanimously elected to that, and we're very, very glad of that as well. She's going to be a fine speaker, I'm sure. So we're ready to rock and roll now. Democrats have got everybody in place. The The committee chairmanships are pretty much decided. And it's going to be interesting to see where we go from here. Want to say hello to everybody over at Democrats.com and our, of course, the folks on the Head On Radio Network chat room. Hello to all of you. We hope you'll give us a call today, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. As I said, wasn't sitting behind the mic yesterday at this time. Boy, I don't know, one of those 24-hour flu things that came through the area or what, but it was down and out, so feeling good today. 3:05 is the time. Yes, we were just checking out. We got one of those atomic clocks here that got the time up to the tenth of a second. I'm a time freak, as I've explained to some of you folks before. Very much a time freak. And it's a great week, you know. You know why. Ah, yes. The number one Ohio State Buckeyes will be in fine form on Saturday, I'm sure. Ready to do battle with those nasty Michigan Wolverines from that state up north. Greatest rivalry in all of sports Saturday. Michigan Wolverines visit Ohio State University, a battle of number one and number two in college football. It should be a titanic struggle. And yours truly will probably be suffering from heart failure, as I usually do on that day. Been to that game many, 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 many times over the years, and I don't think there's ever been a time that that game didn't end with me having a fabulous headache and the tension. I know folks that aren't interested in sports just don't understand that at all. Never will understand that, but oh my God. You'd have to be there to believe it. You know, a lot of folks say, "Guy, you must be a football nut." That's not it. That's not it at all. All the pomp and pageantry and the falderal and the band and everything that goes with a great college football game is what makes it so special. You know, I know a lot of people say, "Oh, it's better to watch it on TV." Phooey. There's nothing like being there. And unfortunately, I won't be there this year. But that didn't quite work out. But it'll be a great game, and I'm sure there'll be zillions of people tuned into that. A lot of special events going on here locally. Believe it or not, the Ohio State University Alumni Association is the largest alumni association in Florida. And there's some major universities here, but their alumni association isn't as large as Ohio State's. And I do want to add, with all the fun things going on in our area here, the closest Michigan Alumni Association get-together is clear up in Sarasota, Florida, a good bit from here. So lots of Buckeyes in this neighborhood. Hey, enough for college football. You all know how I feel. And come Tuesday when I come back, I'm either going to be really, really, really happy or really, really, really sad, one or the other. That game seems to affect folks for, oh, when I was younger, months. Months at a time. So you want to know how crazy I am? There you go. That'll do it. Okay, let's get on to business. Something I wanted to talk to you about now, today, is something that's on a lot of people's mind right now, certainly is on my mind, and I don't want to seem like I'm bashing Democrats, because I'm not. I'm exhorting them to do a good job. And now that we've got the House and Senate, the big question is, it is for me anyway, what are our elected Democrats, both new and incumbent, both of them, what are they going to do for our country now? That's the big question. We've lost some of our civil liberties during these past 6 years. And I want to know if our elected Democrats are going to do anything meaningful to get those liberties back. It's more than obvious to anyone paying attention to governmental affairs these past 6 years that we've had an administration that doesn't give a tinker's damn what you think or what I think or what anybody thinks. They haven't even cared what the Constitution of the United States says. Nor have they given any credence to the Geneva Convention. In fact, they've shown almost total disregard for both the Constitution and the Geneva Convention. This has been no ordinary administration. It's behaved more like a banana republic than a respectable government, in my opinion. Bush and Cheney have acted as though they're accountable to no one. Ordinarily, they wouldn't have gotten away with such un-American activities, but the Republican Congress, bootlickers that they have been, bowed to their every wish. Most of the time, the Republican House and Senate didn't utter a whimper while Bush was trashing the Constitution and acting like the Geneva Convention was, in Albert Gonzalez's words, quaint. And the really corrupt part of this was Bush's signing statements. He seems to think he's the only one in the government that matters at all, and he has surely treated the Congress and their legislation that way. And the signing statements, in case you haven't kept up on that, is just a little signing statement that he makes on any legislation that's passed that says, well, here's the gist of what it says. I don't give a damn what you guys passed. If I don't think it's right, I'm not going to do it. That's pretty much what a signing statement is. And he said to him in so many words, just keep your mouth shut and do what I say. And, you know, that's not the way the government works. There are three equal branches of government. At least that's what it's supposed to be. And then a man of his intellect probably never learned anything in government class about the three equal branches of government. Probably doesn't understand the concept at all, the checks and balances and all. My point here is that now that the Democrats are in control of the House and Senate, it's time for them to stand up to Bush and rescind a whole lot of what Bush has done where they can. The trouble is, I'm not hearing such talk from Democrats right now. No one is saying we need to repeal Bush's legislation that's allowed torture and domestic spying and suspension of habeas corpus in many cases. There really can't be any doubt that Bush would veto such an attempt to repeal his legislation. And if he does, that would be the time to begin impeachment proceedings, for he's committed worse crimes than against America than any other president. The crimes of other impeachment proceedings pale in comparison, in my opinion now. They really do pale in comparison to those of George W. Bush. His lies and his deceptions that took us to this awful situation in Iraq are enough reasons to impeach him, but there are countless other reasons to do so. And I hope the Democrats will consider that. Speaker-elect Pelosi said during the political campaigns that impeachment is off the table. That has worried me ever since she said that. And while I understand that there are many urgent matters to attend to, such as the minimum wage legislation and health care and getting the budget under control and other things, what's more important than restoring our civil liberties to the point where they used to be before this administration came into power? Does her statement really mean that Bush will not be held accountable for his crimes, or was it just perhaps a political ploy? In this case, I kind of hope the latter is the case. For really, when you stop and think about it, what good are higher minimum wages, better health care, balanced budget, if we're not a free people? What difference do these things make if we're at the mercy of our government to do whatever they want with us? Don't the Democrats realize that it's not only Middle Easterners who can be determined to be terrorists by our government? Do they not realize that any citizen in this country can now be declared to be a terrorist and held without trial indefinitely? Do the Democrats think we don't know now, nor will we ever have leaders who would use these new rules to their political advantage as a tool to stifle political dissent? Does anyone think that a man like Dick Cheney, for example, wouldn't have people he disagrees with politically dragged before a military tribunal using this secret evidence they talk about and not even making it available to the defendant? Does anyone not believe that a man like Cheney would deprive such a defendant of legal representation and pronounce a person guilty of whatever crimes they wanted to convict you of? So if you don't want to necessarily apply that to this administration that's here now, think about future administrations and someone you may not trust, like these people. If the Democrats doubt this could happen, all they need to do is look at the case of Jose Padilla. The administration brought charges that he's an enemy combatant. They threw him in prison for nearly 4 years without warrants or charges. He was tortured. He was kept in solitary confinement. And he wasn't allowed legal counsel. And finally, to keep the Supreme Court from taking jurisdiction over Padilla's case, the Bush administration finally filed charges against him, but those charges have nothing to do with Padilla being an Al-Qaeda operative, as they previously stated. And even the federal district judge, I think her name was Cook, pretty sure it was a lady named Cook, said that the Bush lackey, Alberto Gonzalez's case was really weak on facts. The only reason they wanted this legislation is so that they can torture people into incriminating themselves. And cases like Padilla's are exactly what the Democrats need to look at and take action against. And if our Democratic Congress doesn't repeal much of this type of legislation, then they'll be just as guilty of the Bush administration in denying Americans their constitutional rights. And I do believe that. And I know most of you do as well. And there will be abuses. There will be serious abuses of the Patriot Act and, you know, all the new laws that they've passed. And I found one here that I thought was extremely interesting. It's the new Bush policy outrage of the week, as far as I'm concerned. Imagine this, if you will. Trying to see where this came from. Anyway, it's a news story. It said a couple's ill-concealed sexual play aboard a... Imagine this story, if you will. Talk about abuses of the Patriot Act. A couple's ill-concealed sexual play aboard a Southwest Airlines flight from Los Angeles got them charged with violating the Patriot Act, intended for terrorist acts, and could land them in jail for 20 years. According to their indictment, Carl Persing and Don Sewell were allegedly snuggling and kissing inappropriately, making other passengers uncomfortable, when a flight attendant asked them to stop. Persing was observed nuzzling or kissing Sewell on the neck and with his face, blah, blah, blah. And during these actions, Sewell was observed smiling. Well, boy, there's something wrong with that. Reads the indictment filed by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. On a second warning from the flight attendant, Persing snapped back, threatening the flight attendant with serious consequences if he did not leave them alone. Well, the comment was enough to have the couple, both in their early 40s, arrested when the plane reached its destination in Raleigh, North Carolina, and charged with obstructing a flight attendant and with criminal association. They have been placed under legal surveillance until their trial on February 5th, and if found guilty, they both could be sent to jail for up to 20 years. Well, well, well. Can you imagine... a little hanky-panky going on in an airplane, and while I don't know the details of it, it may well have been inappropriate, and it may well have been fine for the flight attendant to go up and ask him to stop it. There might have been kids around and so forth. Up to that point, I think they were doing fine, but my God, when they get the FBI in to try and enforce the Patriot Act on a couple of people necking inappropriately on an airplane, that's an abuse. That is an abuse of power. I think you'd have to agree with that. So, and we all already know that Tom DeLay used that when the Texas Democrats of the State House bugged out and went to Oklahoma to try and avoid a vote coming to the floor in the Texas House of Representatives. So there will be abuses of these new laws, and they've got to be changed around or eliminated to make sure there are no abuses. That's what we'd like to see. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Give us a call. We'd love to talk to you.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Deceivers. They'll fool you any way they can. They'll take away your rights and call you an evil man.
Oh, 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 oh. Great deceivers. Whoa.
Great deceivers.
Whoa, oh, oh, oh. Great deceivers.
They said they had compassion. They gave you a ration. The Bill of Rights, they're bashing. Your check, they be cashing. Ha ha! They fooled you again. It's a faith-based disgrace they got in place. Woo-hoo. And the planet, they're destroying it. Well, I hope you're enjoying it.
Ha ha! Oh, oh, oh. Great deceivers. Whoa.
Great deceiver.
So, oh, oh, oh. Great deceivers. Whoa.
They say they trusted the people, got you under the steeple. Now, like a boll weevil, you in the axis of evil. Ha ha ha. Woo. It's H.B. Barnum and Bush. Never give a sucker an even break. Even you can be a fake. How much more of this can you take before you break? Before you break!
Oh, 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 oh. Great deceivers. Whoa.
Great deceivers.
Oh, 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 oh. Great deceivers. Whoa.
I don't trust the federal government. It's going to be one of the things you hear tonight. I don't want the federal government making decisions on behalf of everybody. You need somebody in office to tell the truth. I don't care whether you're Republican or Democrat. What I care about is can we work together. I trust people. I don't trust the federal government. I trust people. I don't trust the federal government.
Oh, 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 oh. Great deceiver.
You need somebody in office who will tell the truth. I trust people. I don't trust the federal government. You need somebody in office who will tell the truth. I trust people. I don't trust the federal government. You need somebody in office who'll tell the truth. You need somebody in office who'll tell the truth. 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 Tell the truth.
Hey, we're back with you here on the Guy James Fan Show. Welcome back. Just talking about football with somebody, talking about fans. Big week this weekend. Big week. I know. Enough with the football, right? Hey, glad to have all of you with us here on the Guy James Show today. We've got, I kind of did our break at the wrong time there, so we'll have to do another one here shortly in order to get a hold of our guest for the bottom of the hour. We're going to have Elizabeth De La Vega with us, and we're going to talk about impeachment, a subject that is near and dear to my heart right now, and it has got nothing to do with being vindictive, I swear to you, nothing. Nothing whatsoever. I truly mean that. I can honestly say, I'm pretty sure I can say it, we'll never know for sure, but I can honestly say that if Clinton had not been impeached by the Republicans, I would still be down on my knees begging for the impeachment of George W. Bush. I would. So let me just get that out of the way right there. I know those Republicans listen to the program, so yeah, sure. Well, hey, I'm a man of my word, and I'm not kidding about that. If there's ever been a president primed and ready and deserving of being impeached, why, it would be Mr. George W. Bush. And I will go so far as to say as his sidekick, Mr. Cheney, as well, although it would be a whole lot harder to get Mr. Cheney than it would Mr. Bush, in my opinion. And we'll talk about that with our guest coming up in just a moment or so. So you'll want to stay tuned for that. Let's do breakaway right now for a quick break, and we'll be right back.
In the West, the old cowboys put their trust in a creed. They had faith in the law and the worth of a deed. But above all the rest, it was truth that came first. In the sins of the cowboy, a lie was the worst. Now old Davy Crockett had a motto, it said, be sure you are right, and then go ahead. But a rich boy from Texas has forgotten his roots, and the pride of his homeland is dead. All had and no cattle, with no master plan, and the need to do battle to avenge your own man. Cisco and Pancho and Roy would be sad to see this cowboy from Texas gone bad. Yes, we knew the Lone Ranger didn't need any fame. When they wanted to thank him, they just got his name. He needed no credit or praise for his time, but he'd do the right thing just the same. All had and no cattle, with no master plan, and the need to do battle to avenge your old man. Wild Bill and Wyatt and Gene would be sad to see this cowboy from Texas gone bad. Travel that our nation believes. We need truth from a wise man who would not deceive. When Paladin reached for his Colt 45, he was certain the truth would survive. All had and no cattle, with no master plan, and the need to do battle with your head. Sand. Hop along, Cassidy, sure would be sad to see this cowboy from Texas gone bad. Yes, all those old cowboys would surely be sad to see this cowboy from Texas gone bad.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us here this afternoon. And as promised, I told you we've got a great guest this, well, we haven't quite started into this, the bottom of the hour. We're just about 10 seconds away. Anyway, we have Elizabeth De La Vega with us. She served as a federal prosecutor in Minneapolis and San Jose for 20 years. I believe that qualifies her as knowing the law. And she's author of a new book, U.S. v. George W. Bush. And Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Guy.
Well, it's great to have you along. We wanted to find a fine legal mind with an interest in this subject that we're talking about impeachment on the program today. And first of all, why don't you explain to us what your book is about? Your book is not about impeachment.
It's not about impeachment per se. My book is a hypothetical grand jury presentation. It's written in the same way that I would have presented any other criminal case when I was a prosecutor. I put together the evidence of the information that was available to the president and his senior aides at the time they were making statements about various things that none of us will ever forget, such as weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and so forth. And I compared the information they had available to what they said. And that really is the essence of fraud, actually, when people say things that are contradicted by the information they have behind the scenes. So that's what the book is. It's a presentation of a hypothetical indictment of the president and Powell, Rumsfeld, Rice, and Cheney for conspiracy to defraud the United States in connection with the pre-war intelligence.
Well, you've come at this from a completely different direction than most people. Most people have taken what they've read and what they've seen on TV and so forth and just have sort of an opinion about it one way or another. But you've actually gone into making a case. That's interesting. So I would assume that if you prepared this like you would prepare a case for trial, you have gone into this to the very depths of all of their statements and so forth.
Yes, I have. In fact, I think I mentioned it in the introduction to the book. I pretty much immersed myself in the everything on the White House press website, and I looked at all the press briefings. I read every single one, which makes me not a very exciting person, I have to say. And I looked at every single public statement I could find that they made, and then I looked at all the reports that we have, the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence report and various other reports. And the truth of the matter is we have more than enough information to know that the president and his aides defrauded us. And I wanted to explain that in a very straightforward way, which is what I did in the book, because it gets to be such a heightened level of anxiety on both sides, and people end up just shouting at each other about, well, the president lied, no, he didn't, and I don't think that's a very productive way to look at it. So I just approached it with the same approach I use for any other fraud case. And my bottom line is that this case, this fraud, is really no different than the fraud that the Enron executives were prosecuted for, except that, of course, there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of victims, and the financial cost is, of course, $350 billion and counting. So it's a far more grave fraud in its effect and its scope, but the way they did it was really the same as anybody else commits fraud. They used half-truths. They acted as if things were related to each other without really saying so, as we all remember, 9/11 and Saddam Hussein. And that's just how people defraud people every day around the country.
Well, you said something interesting. First of all, you said that makes you not a very interesting person for looking at the White House website. I've had to refer to that place quite a bit as well, because the reason I've done it a few times is to catch them scrubbing things from the which they've done fairly often. But it's also surprised me at the times where they've possibly, for their sake, needed to scrub something and didn't. Have you seen that as well?
Well, I'm not sure if I've found a situation like that, but what I did observe and what was to me added proof of their intent, you know, in any criminal fraud case, the main problem is proving intent. You know, did they do this on purpose? And when you look at the website, for example, in September of 2002, when President Bush said he was starting this quote-unquote open dialogue about the war, even though he'd actually already basically started the war in Iraq. But they made the statements about the aluminum tubes. I don't know if your listeners remember those. But and Condoleezza Rice was on TV, and she said, well, these tubes are only suitable for use in nuclear centrifuge manufacture. Well, there was a big brouhaha about that. And then when you look at what they said later on, they changed what they said. They made it vaguer and less specific, but they were still trying to make that very same point. So you can see by their subtle changes in the words that they use and the fact that they all use the same words, and it makes it very clear that this is a deliberate effort to mislead the public. It's not just the president making a mistake or not knowing what's going on.
Well, all the same words is exactly right. The talking points that went out each and every day on all the talk shows, they were all the same. And you're right. The way they did some of this, Cheney, for example, was kind of used as a point man. He would say over and over and over again that Saddam Hussein was connected to all this, the 9/11 and so forth, after the administration had admitted that they weren't.
But exactly.
So it was. There's no question that was deliberate, because no one could ever convince me that Cheney going out and saying, well, 9/11 was connected to Saddam Hussein, that the president of the United States, if he was an honest and decent man and was trying to, if this was on the up and up, wouldn't say, hey, Dick, wait a minute here. You can't be saying that. But obviously.
Right. And that's something that really is an important point, because a lot of people realize on a gut level that that's wrong. But what I think people may not know is that it's legally wrong as well. There are specific legal instructions that would be given to a jury in a criminal case where if one person, say in a corporation, was having his associate or some subordinate go out and say one thing, say selling life insurance or something, knowing that that person is saying something that's not true, but yet letting it happen, that's called the principle of agency in law. And that means that who's ever letting that happen is as responsible as the person who's actually saying it.
How would you go about, let's say Cheney went on Russert's program and said that, and you went to trial about over this. How would you prove that Mr. Bush had actually heard it?
Well, you don't have to prove that he actually heard it. What you have to prove is that these people are all acting together, and what we know, and in fact Ari Fleischer, and this is actually in the book as well, said a number of times when people such as Rumsfeld or Cheney or Rice or Powell are speaking, they are speaking as on behalf of the president. He actually says that a number of times. So we don't have to prove as to any individual statement that the president heard that particular individual one. But when you show this concerted action over a long course of time, and of course we had the White House Iraq Group, which was their essentially PR group that was putting together these things that people said, that also shows the concerted action. And then what would happen is, the example you gave when Cheney would go on Russert or whatever, the next day or the next few days, people would be all over the press spokesperson, whether it's Ari Fleischer or Scott McClellan, asking about those statements. So, again, the press spokesperson is the president's spokesperson.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, of course, I'm speaking just from a layman's point of view, and you know the law. I have contended for a long time that there have been impeachable events take place during this administration. Do you think, as a practical matter, that that it will come to that? There's obviously going to be many investigations take place. What is your opinion on the politics of this situation right now? Do you think the Democrats will do it if the investigations show that it should be done, or do you think for some sort of political expediency looking toward 2008 that they may decide to back off and let sleeping dogs lie?
Well, all I can tell you right now is what they're saying, and what they're saying is that they're not going to do it. My opinion about that is that neither the Republicans nor the Democrats can fulfill their oaths of office and make such statements in advance. The situation is completely analogous to if a prosecutor set out to do an investigation and announced at the beginning that he or she was not going to indict the person who is under investigation. Their job right now is to conduct the oversight of the executive branch. That's a good half of their job, and that's in the Constitution. And in order to do that in a responsible way, they can't preordain what the outcome is. So it's for them to do this for political expedience is as bad as Republicans not to pursue it for political expedience. So
I agree.
I can't predict what's going to happen, but I don't think we've heard the end of the story.
Oh, I don't think so either. I think they're going to be, and I think I'd be kidding myself if I think some of it wouldn't be because of vengeance and so forth. But there'll be some of it that, well, there's some good, honest people in Congress, and some of them will be doing it because they know it's their duty.
Right, and I don't think it is. I mean, I really think that's a really important point that you just made about vengeance. It is just completely wrong for people to think of it in that way at all. And it would be ironic if the reason the Democrats didn't go forward was because they were afraid people were going to say they were being vengeful. They just need to stand up in an unflinching way and do what they're supposed to do. That's kind of a mature approach to fulfilling their constitutional responsibility, and that's what I would advocate for them to do.
Well, you know, clear back, and we're going to have somebody on later on in the program to talk about it. Congresswoman was on the impeachment panel for Nixon. You know, the entire nation was beginning to feel that it was the right thing to do. And and therefore, when they went ahead and did it, the Democrats did it, were going to do it anyway before Nixon resigned. There were a good number of Republicans that were going to back him on it.
Right, and that's the thing, too. Are you talking about Elizabeth Holtzman?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Well, she has pointed out, and others have pointed out, too. I think John Nichols, who's written a book called The Genius of Impeachment, has pointed out that the Congress has historically been way behind the public in moving forward on impeachment matters. And that was certainly true in the Nixon case and situation. So at this point, we have more than half of the people in this country who already think the president should be impeached, and they haven't even had the hearings. So my position on this is we can no more say that he definitely should be impeached than we could say that he shouldn't be. We have to go forward and let the process take its course and in an honest way, and then see what happens.
Yeah, to give you some idea how immersed we are in this subject right now, John Nichols is going to be with us next Tuesday on the program. So, with you and Elizabeth Holtzman and John, we expected to come out of this with a pretty good idea of what needs to be done, what ought to be done, what's right and wrong, and how it ought to be done. How about Mr. Cheney in all of this?
Well, he's in the exact same position. He's equally culpable. There are so many different areas of criminal conduct that it kind of makes people's eyes glaze over. One of them is the pre-war intelligence, of course, but another one has to do with the military, the torture and so forth, and then this attempt to immunize themselves by causing the passage of the Military Commissions Act. To me, as a former prosecutor, that attempt and their effort to do that, the timing and so forth, is actually further proof that they absolutely knew that what they did was wrong.
Well, how about the Military Commissions Act? Was it, in fact, an ironclad get-out-of-jail-free card for these people?
Well, I think unless we get a Supreme Court that is just totally unwilling to follow the law at all, that statute will be found unconstitutional. Because I don't know of any precedent where elected government officials have passed a law after the fact that purports to give them a get-out-of-jail card, a get-out-of-jail-free card for something they did already. I just don't even know how to start analyzing that from a legal perspective. But
it's too bizarre to even contemplate, really.
It is. And it shows the fact that the president was rushing to get that done just when these people were going to be brought over and when more and more information was coming to light about what he had authorized. And now, of course, we have the CIA acknowledging that the president signed a memo authorizing these extraordinary renditions, the kidnappings and so forth, sending people to places where we know there's a pattern and practice of torture. And it would be completely insincere to suggest otherwise on the part of the president.
Well, we hope the Supreme Court will take their duty solemnly in that
right.
particular instance. Is that case being advanced to the Supreme Court right now?
Yes, it is. There are a number of plaintiffs who are represented. I'm not sure if it's by the Center for Constitutional Rights or what group, but I think it's the Center for Constitutional Rights has brought a case challenging the Military Commissions Act.
Okay.
It's new, though. I mean, the act itself is new, so the case is less than a month old.
Oh, certainly controversial. That's for certain. It's
right.
Been what, a couple of months now, I suppose, since they passed. So, in the annals of legal procedures, I guess that's a very, very short time. It'll take.
It's a very short time.
Lawyers don't move fast. That's usually.
Right.
Well, Elizabeth, I want to thank you very much for being on the program. You've given us great insight into this. We may call you again if things proceed a little further, which I happen to think they will.
And, you're right.
I'm looking forward to reading your book. I have not, U.S. v. George W. Bush. It sounds like interesting reading.
Yeah, it's not even in the bookstore yet. It's just available on Amazon right now. So it'll be
okay.
In the bookstore in a couple of weeks.
Thanks so much
for having me.
Well, thanks for being on the program very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Elizabeth De La Vega, her new book is U.S. v. George W. Bush, and it's going to lay out the case. So who can do it better than someone in her profession, right? Of course, most people in Washington are lawyers nowadays, or a good number. Love to know what percentage of the Congress is are members of the legal profession. What would you guess, 75%? I'd say it has to be somewhere in that neighborhood, somewhere close anyway. I'm trying to think of some who aren't. I'm sure there are many, anyway. That's the subject of the show today. We want to talk about impeachment today. If you have thoughts on it, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give us a call. We're, where are we at here? Very unorganized today, I can tell you that. Very unorganized. We're going to pause for a short break, and we'll be right back.
Station wagon laying foundations on the shadows of overpasses and plains. But I'm feeling good. It's 7 o'clock. We're gonna drive across the county line. Find Saturday night like an orphan child with the good days left behind. Well, I'm not sure we can stay. The sun's going down. Another day.
day. The sun's going down, and it's the end of the day.
Back with you on this extremely quiet Thursday afternoon. Always glad to have all the Guy James Show listeners with us. Don't even care if you're Michigan fans. Ah, yes, the big one coming up Saturday, the game. You know, in Ohio and in Michigan, and in fact, a friend of mine wrote a book about the game called a one-game season, and that's pretty much what it is. If you can brag about winning that game after you've been on the team and graduated from school and get to talking to ex-players and alums later on in your life, if you can brag about having played and won that game, why, you're a big deal. That's just how it is. Big deal. Always felt sorry for a lot of you folks that get to see sports programming on ESPN and ABC know the name Kirk Herbstreit. And Kirk was a quarterback for Ohio State, and his father was a player for Ohio State, and so he's got scarlet and gray blood in his veins. And Kirk, going 4 years through school, never got a chance to beat University of Michigan, so always felt sorry for Kirk. They pass out these little gold pants, and what they're indicative of is the pants that the Michigan Wolverines wear in the games. And if you beat Michigan, why, all the Ohio State players get a little pair of these gold pants, and poor Kirk never got one. 866-546-5254. Where we at here? Got so many things to talk about, don't know where to start. One thing I would like to say, and let me just get this off my chest. Many of you know, I've always been a James Carville fan. I am. I was. Let me put it that way. I was. We've had James Carville on the program quite a while back, and I always enjoyed him. He's an entertainer first and quite a good political mind. But I got to tell you, I don't appreciate what James Carville is doing right now in this campaign against Howard Dean. I'm not sure what the intent is behind it. I'm not sure who he's working for, although I suspect he's working for the Clintons right now in some way, shape, or form. He has a tremendous allegiance to the Clintons, and why not? He helped get Bill Clinton elected. But I'm just not sure of his motives here in trying to get Howard Dean kicked out, because, as you all know, Rahm Emanuel is a Clinton person, And so it's plain to see who's in charge of the Democratic party right now. Hillary is the favorite to win the nomination in the next election, in the primary. She's got a huge war chest behind her. She's probably got the greatest fundraiser that ever lived behind her in one William Jefferson Clinton. And she has a tremendous advantage. And Rahm Emanuel will be there for her. I'm sure James Carville will be there for her, and a lot of people will. But there's going to be some opposition. This isn't a just handed over, this is mine type of deal. There's going to be a good amount of Democratic political discourse take place over the next couple of years. And it's by no means certain that Hillary Clinton's going to end up with the nomination, especially since one Barack Obama has been putting forth quite a strong presence lately. So who knows how that's going to turn out. But I do not like the idea of James Carville trying to force Howard Dean out as chairman of the DNC. Howard Dean has done a tremendous job. He's raised a lot of money, and I think he has proven that his 50-state strategy was absolutely, positively correct. And Rahm Emanuel handpicked 22 House of Representatives candidates, and only 8 of them won. So I want you to keep that in mind when we decide who's the political genius in the Democratic Party right now. That's nothing against Rahm Emanuel, but let's take a good look at the facts here. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Greg from Connecticut.
Hi, Greg.
I wanted to comment about this. You sort of perked my curiosity when you're talking about this. You know, I think that this whole situation between Carville is very much sort of in the Rahm Emanuel camp. And I think that a lot of this has to do with, I think there are several things. I think it's very much sort of part of in the Hillary camp. But I also think these people are very, very against Netroots type candidates. They want, you know, the Beltway people to decide who is going to be the acceptable candidate and who is not. And I think that that also ties in with our Connecticut situation here with the whole Lamont race as well. You know, they don't like the idea that someone can stand up and say, you know, hey, we don't like the established candidates. We're going to find someone else, because then that has direct bearing on Hillary, who is not a popular Netroots candidate.
Excellent point. Absolutely excellent point. It's the them versus us thing here. The old-time politicos don't want to give up the power, do they?
Yeah, and, you know, Carville, you know, I have a lot of respect for Carville, but I think in many ways he's back in 1992. And they very much represent sort of this centrist point of view. You know, we don't want to offend. We don't want to say anything that's whatever. And it's been proven again and again and again that Republican light loses every time. You know, and I just think that the James Carville people, they're also looking at their own pocketbooks as getting, you know, getting those big consultation fees, and they're upset when Howard Dean wants to invest money in Alabama or in Georgia or whatever.
I can't remember whether it was Adlai Stevenson or Harry Truman said, if you're a voter and you're faced with a Republican or a Democrat who acts like a Republican, they'll take the Republican every time. There's something that you've made a great point. I really think you have. Along comes Howard Dean, along in the last election, comes out with his net roots and the big money raising and so forth. And they just weren't ready to give up that power. And I have to tell you something. The day after the Iowa caucus, I was in Washington this last time. And I went into the John Kerry office and had a discussion with them the next day after that. And they pretty much told me that, hey, Howard Dean can go do what he wants to do and so forth. But the pros took over. And that was their word. The pros took over. And Carville is one of the pros. Let's face it.
Well, you know, if he continued to bring results, that would be one thing. But, you know, let's look at a couple of things. For instance, Rahm Emanuel was very much against John Tester in Montana. You know, we'll never pull that off. Then in Illinois, you know, we had Christine Sigalis. I don't know how to pronounce her name.
You got it.
And Rahm Emanuel didn't like her. Now, Tammy Duckworth was a great candidate. I'm not saying that she wasn't. But that was a $3 million mistake that Rahm Emanuel made, because he decided that the people who lived in Illinois weren't capable of making the decision who the best candidate was.
Yeah. He put all their money behind Duckworth. And, you know, he would have put it behind the Sigalis had she won that primary, but he decided early on that that's how it was going to be. Hey, got a pause for news at the top of the hour. I'll be glad to have you hang on if you like.
Okay.
We'll be right back after the news.
Okay.
The Quality News Network. House Democrats have solidified their leadership today, electing the San Francisco Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi as the next Speaker of the House and Maryland's Denny Hoyer as Majority Leader. Republicans select their House leaders tomorrow. The head of the U.S. Central Command, General John Abizaid, has ordered the 15th Marine Expeditionary Unit, that's 2,200 Marines, deployed to Iraq's Anbar province to help quell the continuing violence there. So far this month, 44 American Marines and soldiers have been killed in Iraq, half of them in Anbar. More kidnappings today in Baghdad, where a half dozen minibuses, each with a dozen people aboard, were reportedly stopped at a fake security checkpoint by gunmen dressed in police uniforms. The day's abductions follow those 2 days ago of more than 100 civil servants at the Education Ministry, whom, according to the ministry, are still missing, at least 70 to 80 of them, although the government claims most of them have been released unharmed. The list of candidates for the Republican presidential nomination in 2008 is growing, with today's announcement by Senator John McCain that he's forming an exploratory committee, as have former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani and California Congressman Duncan Hunter. Former Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson says he intends to do the same thing in January. As many as 9 people have been killed by storms and tornadoes that swept through southeast North Carolina this morning. President Bush, now in Singapore, is urging world leaders to stand firm against North Korea's nuclear program. He is also warning North Korea against sending any of its nuclear materials or weapons to other countries, saying that to do so would be considered a grave threat against the United States. He's also assuring Asian allies that despite GOP losses in last week's elections, he remains committed to opening up global trade markets. Chinese President Hu Jintao has indicated that China is prepared to help Pakistan to build several nuclear power plants over the next couple of decades. Meanwhile, Pakistan announcing today that it has successfully test-fired a new medium-range missile capable of striking deep inside India. Spain, Italy, and France have devised their own Middle East peace plan that they'll submit at a European Union summit next month. The plan includes an immediate ceasefire, formation of a Palestinian unity government, and an exchange of prisoners. Hamas says that negotiations to exchange a kidnapped Israeli soldier for Palestinian prisoners is being held in Israel have now fallen apart. China's confirming that all 47 miners trapped underground following a coal mine explosion have died. This brings to 81 the number of deaths from 2 coal mine accidents in the Shenzhen province in the past week. And a Nobel Prize-winning economist Milton Friedman has died in San Francisco at the age of 94. This is the Quality News Network.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
Two teams of geneticists are confirming the theory that Neanderthals, thought to have lived on the Earth over 38,000 years ago, were indeed human beings. The confirmation is the result of DNA testing. The Muscular Dystrophy Association says that new research shows that stem cells have been successful in treating the disease in dogs, leading to what they describe as cautious optimism that this could be a significant step towards treating people. Reader's Digest has agreed to a $1.6 billion buyout offered by an investment group led by a private equity firm. HCA shareholders have approved a $21 billion leveraged buyout that will take the hospital chain private. Consumer prices fell 0.5% in October for the second consecutive month, helped by falling gas prices. Hertz has gone public, selling just over 88 million shares in its initial public offering yesterday. That's about a quarter of the company. Security and Exchange Commission has begun a formal investigation into Dell Computers, prompting the company to delay today's scheduled release of its third quarter earnings reports. Sears reporting its third quarter profits more than tripled despite a drop in same-store sales. And San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge director is looking at the possibility of getting corporate sponsors to help lower the Bridge District's $87 million deficit. However, they say that
such corporate sponsorship would not involve any naming rights. Light Sweet crude below $58 an ounce this hour at $57.25. Sorry, that's a barrel, not an ounce. On Wall Street, again in record territory, the Dow is up 72 at 12,323. NASDAQ is up 10, and the S&P 500 is up 7. MoreQualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter.
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody. Good to have all of you along with us here in the Guy James Show this afternoon. And let's get to it. As I promised, we're in our continuing story today about impeachment. I promised you great guest today, and we have our second great guest today. We have Elizabeth Holtzman with us. Elizabeth, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Hey, thanks so much for being on the program today. Those of you that aren't aware of what Elizabeth has accomplished in her life, she's been the district attorney of Brooklyn. She was a House member for what, 4 terms, was it?
Yes.
So you know a lot about the subject we're about to talk about, and we're talking about impeachment today, and we're going to be talking about it on our next program as well. There's a lot to talk about. You you have co-authored with somebody a new book on impeachment. Am I right?
That's right. It's called The Impeachment of George W. Bush, and I have a niche expertise because when I was in Congress, I served on the House Judiciary Committee when we voted to impeach Richard Nixon. So I had to go and study all those old English law books and the Constitution and the debates on the ratification of the Constitution and what's meant by high crimes and misdemeanors and the procedure and all that. And that, of course, is the only impeachment that Congress ever undertook that has withstood the test of time in terms of being fair and honorable and thoughtful and that won the support of the American people.
Let me ask you a quick question about that. You voted to impeach him, and then he resigned. Was he actually considered as having been impeached?
No, he resigned rather than face certain impeachment. Our process was a bipartisan process. It was a very fair process, and the consequence was that because the evidence was so overwhelming and the constitutional arguments were so strong that he would have been impeached by an overwhelming majority in the House. I mean, if there were 5 votes for him out of 435, that would have been a lot, and the same thing in the Senate. So what happened was that Senate Republicans went to him and said, there's no way you can fight this. This is a bipartisan matter. You have overwhelming number of Republicans. Richard Nixon was a Republican joining with the Democrats. There's no way you can fight this impeachment. You should resign. And so he resigned rather than being removed from office. He would have been the first president removed from office if he had not resigned. There's no question about that.
Well, that's an important lesson for a lot of people to know right now, because the bipartisanship of that whole affair was something, well, for example, that didn't happen during the Clinton impeachment.
No, the Clinton impeachment came about because the Republicans in Congress wanted to smear him and wanted to see what then the special prosecutor, Kenneth Starr, they were involved in a political effort. What we did during the Nixon impeachment came about not because Congress started the impeachment process. The American people insisted that the president be held accountable. It started with the Saturday Night Massacre when President Nixon said the special prosecutor who was investigating him had to be fired. And what happened was the American people rose up and said, we're not a banana republic. The president can't stop an investigation into himself. And Congress, you better start acting. So that's how impeachment started. It didn't start from the Congress. It started from the American people. And it was a bipartisan process. It was a very fair process. The president had full opportunity to have his side heard. There never was a partisan vote, in, as I can recall, in the whole time that hearing was held, that the committee met. And I think in the end, the American people were very, I would say, felt that the committee had acted in a very responsible way. And we basically restored our constitutional democracy and preserved it from a president who said he was above the law. That's what happened.
Well, it's so odd that the members of the House, when you were there, the Republican members of the House, didn't see this as a partisan issue. That was something that they knew the American people wanted done and had to be done, and they did it. And yet the Republicans that came along later had long memories of that situation, and I still think that had something to do with the Clinton impeachment. They hadn't forgotten Nixon in all those years, and it was somewhat of a get-even-gotcha thing, I think.
I don't know. I wasn't there during the Clinton impeachment. I wasn't in the House. I did testify against the proceedings because I thought there were no grounds for impeachment under the Constitution, and I thought the procedures were shocking, so terrible to release a report attacking the president without giving him a chance beforehand to point out the errors or the inaccuracies. I mean, we never would have done anything like that during the Nixon impeachment. I'm not saying the Republicans all supported the impeachment, but they supported a process that was fair. A number of Republicans on the committee did not support the impeachment process and the vote that the committee took, but the Supreme Court required that certain tapes be turned over after the committee voted, and they showed that indisputably that Richard Nixon had, from the get-go, orchestrated an illegal cover-up, an obstruction of justice. And at that point, every single member of the House Judiciary Committee, every single Republican member joined with the Democrats and other Republicans in supporting impeachment. So it was unanimous by the members of the House Judiciary Committee. So that was made it very hard for anybody to say the process wasn't fair or the evidence wasn't there. So I don't know if there are people still holding the committee, trying to undo that. But the fact of the matter is, when you get every Republican, you get every Southern Democrat, conservative Democrat, supporting an impeachment effort, and they did it in a very fair way, something has to be right. And if people don't like it, well,
absolutely.
Some people would be mad about, you can't help that.
Hard to argue with that. The founders, knowing that we needed to be protected from, coming away from being led by a king and so forth, they knew that we needed to be protected from some evil person or dishonest person that might get in president as president. So they made the rules for impeachment. And they said the new democracy needed the ability to remove a president if necessary. And they did set a very high bar. Do you think the present administration is over that bar?
Oh, without any doubt. I think that the standard was set, and you can see that in reading the debates. I put them in the back of my book in an appendix. They were very short, the debates on the impeachment clause. And basically what happened was that the framers started out saying, well, we have to, even though we have a system of checks and balances and all these checks on a president, even a four-year term, a president still could become a tyrant, still could be somebody who would put himself above the rule of law, still be somebody who would threaten the democracy. So they created the impeachment power. First, they put in the grounds for impeachment as treason. Then they said bribery. Well, we know what treason is defined in the Constitution, and bribery is a well-known concept. But then a framer from Virginia stood up and said, well, you know, they're great and dangerous offenses that will subvert the Constitution that are not covered by the grounds of treason and bribery. And so they put in the term high crimes and misdemeanors. And that's to cover the subversion of the Constitution by a president. And that's what you have with regard to George W. Bush. I mean, I'll give you a few examples. Number one, driving the country into war on a basis of lies and deception. Not that he was duped, but he knew that what he was telling the American people wasn't true. For example, he knew that Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden were not in cahoots, but he said they were. And the consequence was that by the time we got into the war, more than 60% of the American people thought that Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11. We never would have gone to war if that argument hadn't been made. But President Bush knew it wasn't true. How do we know it wasn't true? What is the evidence for that? Right after 9/11, when there's a huge meeting in the White House and people are discussing what's to be done, and Rumsfeld said, let's bomb Iraq, not Afghanistan, because there are no good bombing locations in Afghanistan, the President of the United States goes up to the Chief of Counterterrorism for the United States, the most knowledgeable person on counterterrorism, and says to him, his name was Richard Clark, he said, Richard Clark, was Saddam Hussein responsible for 9/11? And Richard Clark said, no, Mr. President, it's Osama bin Laden. And then the president says, well, please get to, you know, please look into it again. Richard Clark pulls together a top team of FBI, CIA, other officials, and they send a memo to the president saying, it's not Saddam Hussein who was behind 9/11. It's Osama bin Laden. So the fact of the matter is we know the president was informed. He chose, however, to ignore that information and to lie to the American people. Now, lying to American people to get them into a war is a subversion of our democracy. Why is that? Because in our democracy, the people, through the Congress, get to decide on matters of war and peace and whether we go to war, unless, of course, there's an imminent attack on us and it has to be responded to immediately. But the reason for that is because there's no more serious decision a nation can make to send its own citizens to die in battlefield, to risk their lives and their limbs, to spend huge amounts of money, to kill people in other nations. I mean, that's not to be done lightly. And it's not to be done without the approval and the agreement and the consent of the Congress and the American people. But when you lie, when you defraud the Congress, when you defraud the American people, you've deprived them of their right in a democracy to make a thoughtful, intelligent decision. And so, to me, that's a subversion of the democracy, and that's grounds for impeachment. The second ground for impeachment is the president, under the Constitution, must take care that the laws are faithfully executed. That's the constitutional phrase. He has to obey the law. That's what it means. Fancy word for obey the law and implement the law. The law says that you can't wiretap American citizens without going to a special court. This law was created because Richard Nixon had violated the Constitution and the laws of the United States by illegally wiretapping. And that illegal wiretapping was the basis of one of the grounds of his impeachment. President Bush has said, I don't care what the law says. I'm the commander-in-chief, and so I can wiretap whomever I want. Well, he can't. Under the Constitution, under the laws of this country, the president is not above the law. And not only does the Constitution say that he has to obey the law, we have a Supreme Court case exactly in point. President Truman, during the Korean War, said, oh my goodness, the steel mills are about to go on strike. We have to make sure that we have enough steel for the bullets and the guns and the tanks and the planes. So I'm taking over the steel mills. I'm commander-in-chief.
Is that the one known as the Youngstown case?
Correct.
Okay.
The steel seizure case. The Supreme Court said, Mr. President, you can't do that. You're just commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy. You're not commander-in-chief of the country. And unless Congress has said you can seize a steel mill, you can't do that. So we have a precedent exact precedent by the U.S. Supreme Court. We have the Constitution, and yet President Bush has blithely and repeatedly said that he is not bound to obey the law. He's above the law. And then, of course, you have the situation of presidents refusing to obey the law with regard to the Geneva Conventions and the War Crimes Act. Geneva Conventions are the law of the land because they were ratified. He said and he made the Geneva Conventions not applicable to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. The consequences that we know were terrible mistreatment of people at Abu Ghraib. And the consequences also are that he was responsible under the law for bringing to justice those who authorized and were responsible for it, and that's never happened. There have been no higher-ups held responsible for what happened at Abu Ghraib, for what happened with any of the CIA mistreatments, no higher-ups at all, even though we know that Rumsfeld himself admitted to violating the Geneva Conventions in at least one instance. So that's a third ground. The fourth ground, in my view, is his failure with regard to Katrina. The president has to take care the laws are faithfully executed. He is commander-in-chief of disaster relief. He was told personally about Katrina. He was told personally by, you've done a heck of a good job, Brownie, that there was going to be a catastrophe in New Orleans. He was told directly by the head of the National Hurricane Institute, that the levees could be breached. We know this because there's a video. Did the president ask one question about what more needed to be done? Did he ask whether the federal troops were mobilized? Did he ask whether there were enough transportation facilities? Did he ask whether there was an evacuation plan? Did he ask whether there were enough health facilities and medical personnel? Did he ask if there were anything else that the federal government could do? Did he ask if there was anything else he could do? No. He just said, let's pray for these people, and he went back on vacation. You cannot walk away from your responsibility to save human lives. We're not talking about one life. We're not talking about 10 lives. We're not talking about 100 lives. We're talking about thousands of lives and tens of and billions of dollars of property. The federal government didn't lift a finger, and it should have lifted a finger. And to me, that's a high crime and misdemeanor. That's an impeachable offense.
I agree. Well,
so that's in a nutshell. Sorry it took so long.
Well, no, you didn't take so long. It's good to have these things explained in detail. The laymen here who are not familiar with a lot of this need to understand. Because, as you know, you hear these arguments all the time on talk radio, on TV, the talking heads. He lied. No, he didn't. He lied. No, he didn't. It's good to have the absolute facts. If you've never been a prosecutor.
Yes, I was.
Oh, you were?
District attorney in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Which, you know, we had a lot of criminal cases, and I was responsible for a lot of prosecutions.
So the DA DA actually goes to court, and you don't hand that off to one of your viewers.
Yeah, well, generally, that's right. In Brooklyn, it's not customary for the district attorney himself or herself to go into court, so I didn't do that.
That's a big responsibility. What I was going to ask you is if you had to take this in as a prosecutor, how if you're a betting woman, and maybe you're not, what do you think your odds are in getting this done?
Well, if I were a prosecutor, I'd want more evidence. Not that we don't have enough technically to make the case, in my opinion, but I believe that the Congress now would undertake some very serious investigations, similar to what was done before the House Judiciary Committee did impeachment. You had the Senate Watergate Committee, you had Howard Baker and Senator Ervin, and Howard Baker said, well, we got to find out what the president knew and when he knew it. So let's find out what the president knew and when he knew it before the war started, about WMD and what he knew and exactly when he knew it about the other claims that he made in connection with going to war. Because I think, given the disaster that this war has become, the American people are entitled to know whether the president lied fully or whether he was duped. I don't think he was duped because we have one very good example of how he told the American people something that he knew wasn't true. And we have another example in which he was on notice that what he was saying wasn't true. That has to do with the uranium claim in Niger that Hussein was trying to get that.
The yellow cake.
Right, that he was trying to get yellow cake uranium in Niger. And the interesting thing is that the president referred in the State of the Union message to British intelligence. Well, why would you use the term British intelligence? It's his own words. The only reason to use it is because you can't use American intelligence because American intelligence knew that that plane was a lie and a forgery and a phony. So if you're using British intelligence, either you know what American intelligence is saying, so therefore you know the claim is a phony, or you're on notice that something is wrong, because if you're the president of the United States and you're sending the American soldiers into war, and it's based on British intelligence, you have an obligation to say, hey, well, what does American intelligence have to say about this? What does good old American intelligence have to say? If he didn't ask the question, maybe it's because he knew the answer.
I thought that was a dead giveaway when he gave that. I thought every member of American intelligence should be insulted, and from what I understand, many of them were.
Right.
And tell me, do you still stay connected to the august body you used to be part of in Washington, or?
Well, I'm on a. I was appointed to a commission that. That's involved in declassification of U.S. secret files on Nazi war criminals and Japanese war criminals. But I do stay in touch with members of the House and Senate. And, of course, I am very pleased about the elections that took place on November 7th. And I think there never would have been an opportunity to hold President Bush accountable if the Republicans remained in control. But I think now there is. And I think that if the Democrats proceed properly and in a fair way and in a bipartisan way and get the facts, as were all the facts, or as many of the facts as possible, as we did in Watergate, American people will demand his removal from office, because I don't believe that the American people will tolerate for one second that American soldiers' blood, one drop of blood, was given on a basis of lies.
I think you're right, and I agree. Can I ask you a quick question? You just told me something that I didn't know about you. You say you're on about the Nazi war crimes and stuff. I'm a former Ohio resident, and there was such a big case there on the John Demjanjuk case,
right?
The man from Cleveland. Has that been totally resolved now?
No, but a court has ordered that he be deported on a basis of some. Because of his alleged involvement as a concentration camp guard, in persecution as a concentration camp guard at other concentration camps. Initially, the government focused primarily on Treblinka, although it did mention the other concentration camps. But now the focus is on the other concentration camps, and he's been ordered deported. The case, as I understand it, is on appeal.
Well, that's been a dogged case. It's gone on a long time, many, many years. Well, good. I'm glad to get updated on that. Thank you. I do want to thank you so much for being on the program. Tell us about the book one more time.
It's called The Impeachment of George W. Bush. It's published by Nation Books. It's out. You can get it at your bookstore, online. But it's not a very long book. It's an easy read, and I certainly recommend my own book very highly. Of course,
well, you should.
Completely.
And you've got a pretty good article on Common Dreams right now, I believe is where it is, right?
Yes. Thank you.
People want to read that as well. That's very, very good. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
It's great to hear your insight on all this.
Thank you so much, and thank you, listeners, too.
Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
There's a lady that knows a lot about the situation, and she's been there, done that with these impeachments, and going to be very interesting to see how this whole thing shakes out. Very interesting. I think guys like Henry Waxman and John Conyers and all, I think in the interest, well, let's put it just how it is, and it's like our other Elizabeth told us a little earlier. De La Vega. This is their duty. This is not some partisan thing. It's their duty. They have to find out if this president has been involved in illegal activities. They must. They are bound to by their oath. That is one of the checks that the checks and balances are all about in Congress. So this is not something that need be political. Not at all. Most of America has suspected and understood for some time that there's some sort of criminal activity involved in this administration. That is why that they must go ahead with investigations. And hey, if the investigations don't find anything or if they're not conclusive, okay. That's it. You won't hear me complaining anymore. All we wanted was a good shot at investigating and finding out the truth of the matter. And if they do, they'll put it before the American people, and the American people will decide whether or not this president should be impeached. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
I'd like to speak about the impeachment and also about the James Carville.
Yes.
The impeachment, well, I'd love, well, I'm glad that lady's on our side. Isn't she great?
She is, in fact.
Both of them, yeah, both of them. Anyway, I do think that we should get rid of them. Why should we keep somebody like that? I mean, is it like a sword, you know, taking over one of those things from outer space, taking over the White House? I mean, I think they should all be in jail, really.
Well, they may end up that way. We'll see.
I think a good place would be down in Cuba.
Although,
where they have the open air, you know. And
did you know this? Of course, impeachment kind of precludes them from being prosecuted on things criminally.
Yeah.
Did you know that Vice President Spiro Agnew, back when he got caught for what he got caught for and resigned his office,
mm-hmm.
he asked Congress to impeach him.
Oh.
So that he would be protected from the law.
I didn't know that.
Interesting, yes.
Yeah.
Strange but true.
Yeah, but I would, you know, if they did go to jail, I think put them down in Cuba, this place in Cuba, and they have the open air and all that good food, and they get little plane rides every now and then, you know, foreign countries. But, you know, don't do anything. I mean, maybe make them stand still for a while, you know, but don't do anything outstanding. I don't think they would like it very much. But I'm one of the ones that watched the whole Bill Clinton impeachment. And,
Well, good. I thought I was the only crazy one. There were two of us.
And even OJ trial, too. But anyway, I remember, you know, that who was the guy that was head of it from Illinois, the white haired guy?
Oh, Henry Hyde.
Yeah, he would not, you know, he would just cut our side off. You know, he was so rude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know. But anyway, that's a long, long story.
He was no Mr. Clean himself.
Oh no. His youthful indiscretion that destroyed a family.
Right.
But anyhow, what I wanted to say about James Carville, I saw a snippet of him. He was going to be on on Wolf Blitzer.
Yes.
And he was saying that we should have won more seats if Howard Dean had invested in some of the, you know, people that run. I mean, he's just really getting nastier and nastier to me. And I'm like you. I used to kind of like him, you know. And
oh, yeah. I don't think after a great victory and all that he should be trying to cause any disruption in the party right now.
Yeah.
We won. We're glad we won. We won with a nice margin. Hey, let's let it go at that. Let's take what we got and run with it. That's the way I feel.
But he was dismissed the 50 state thing.
Yeah,
he just dismissed that. So I don't know and he and Begala have never liked Dean. They've never liked him.
No, well, it's like Greg said it a little earlier. Howard Dean's an outsider to Washington, and those,
right.
those boys
right.
That are entrenched inside that beltway, they don't like outsiders.
Right. Well, but we don't need that. We don't need to. I mean, that's another that's another anarchy, or whatever you call it. You know, dictatorship.
Well,
we can't have anything.
You're right, Juanita, and that's something, you know, that, and you listen to the show every day. You know, we've been preaching that. This is our party, not theirs.
Right.
People.
And they're supposed to work for us.
That's right. And Carville and people like that, they still want it to be the old fashioned way, old time smoke filled room politics, and that's not how it's going to be anymore.
And he's just getting more and more vicious about it toward Dean. He was actually a guest on Wolf Blitzer's show. I didn't see the whole thing. But, you know, I've been noticing that, and I thought, well, he was saying, well, we should have won a whole lot more, you know. He'd have done this and that and the other. Well, my God, you know, be thankful for what we got with all the voting machine problems and
Yeah,
and all of
and,
that.
And let's not forget his good friend Rahm Emanuel. He picked 22 candidates, handpicked them himself, and 13 of them lost. So don't let's not have them those two starting to condemn Howard Dean. No.
And I don't think he's doing the Clintons any favors. I mean, if they're behind this, they're not doing themselves any favors either.
Well, it's going to be a power struggle within the party right now, and
that's ridiculous. And you know who he wanted to take Howard Dean's place?
Oh, Harold Ford.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right. And you know, and Harold's he's got other things in mind for what he. I don't think he. In fact, I think I heard him say he didn't want any part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we will see. But there's a future for Harold Ford in the Democratic Party, I'm sure.
Okay.
Well, hey, Juanita, the people in the chat room are asking you to come on over.
I have had trouble getting in there. That it just will not accept my
Let me see here.
I try to put in a new one, and it wouldn't work.
Yeah, someone here we are talking chat room business on the... But let me see here if I can give you another... No, I can't right now. I don't have it. Well, anyway, give it another try.
Okay, I'll try to work something out.
All right.
Take a while.
thanks, Juanita.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Ah, yes. It's, it's about that time, don't you think? Hey, first of all, talking about Republicans, let's hear from a couple of them right now. Let's hear from three of them right now. I try and go through every day and find out the most offensive statements anybody's made each and every day. Stupid or downright inflammatory, nasty, mean, rotten. And here's some.
Well, President Bush also reaching out to congressional Democrats.
Mikey Reagan.
But if my next guest is right, Democrats really don't want to see the problem solved because they do not want the president to get the credit. Credit like President Ronald Reagan and Republicans received for ending the Cold War. With us now to explain is President Reagan's son, Michael Reagan. So, Michael, you think the Democrats just don't want this president to come out of Iraq okay?
They don't want this president to get the credit for ending the war in Iraq at all. I mean, look what happened over the weekend. You've got, Leahy out there wanting to throw the NSA program under the bus. You have Leahy out there also wanting to throw the Patriot Act under the bus. You've got Pelosi throwing Steny Hoyer under the bus, Jane Harman under the bus. Alcee Hastings may be driving that bus. This does not look like a way to win the war in Iraq. It looks like a way, in fact, to make Iraq stay in play, at least through the 2008 election cycle, so that they can use it as a wedge issue to, in fact, win the presidency in 2008.
Now, if that isn't a ridiculous... I listened to that about three times and thought, no, I mean, everybody knows that Mikey Reagan is an idiot that's lived off his father's name all of his life. But, oh, my God. The Democrats, in other words, are trying to postpone this war so that in the coming election we can use it as a wedge issue and we don't want to give George Bush credit for ending it. Mikey, has George Bush given any indication whatsoever that he wanted to end this war? Anything? Can you give me one example, Mikey, where Georgie Boy said he wanted to end this war? He's already said it was going to go on to the next president. He's already admitted that. Oh, God. And here's our good friend Mikey Savage.
And I want to tell you something, and I'm going to say it to you loud and clear. The radical homosexual agenda will not stop until religion is outlawed in this country. Make no mistake about it. They're all not nice decorators. You better get it through your head before it's too late. They threaten your very survival. They went after the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is now caving in to the homosexual mafia. They will not stop until they force their agenda down your throats. Gay marriage is just the tip of the iceberg. They want full and total subjugation of this society to their agenda.
Anybody remember Mark Foley's comments and everything about gay issues and all that, gay marriage and all that? I'll give you 50-1 that Mike Savage is gay. He's just denying his sexuality is all he's doing. He hates himself. Mikey Savage absolutely hates himself. That's what that's all about. Mike Savage is gay. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think any psychologist in the nation would tell you after hearing what he says about gay people all the time, that Mike is gay. Mike, be true to yourself. Be honest with what you are and quit lying to the public. Quit making a spectacle of yourself. And speaking of making a spectacle of yourself, how about this? Glenn Beck.
History was made last Tuesday when Democrat Keith Ellison got elected to Congress representing the great state of Minnesota. Well, not really unusual that Minnesota would elect a Democrat. What is noteworthy is that Keith is the first Muslim in history to be elected to the House of Representatives. He joins us now. Congratulations, sir.
How you doing, Glenn? Glad to be here.
Thank you. I will tell you, may we have 5 minutes here where we're just politically incorrect and I play the cards face up on the table?
Go there.
Okay. No offense, and I know Muslims. I like Muslims. I've been to mosques. I really don't believe that Islam is a religion of evil. I think it's being hijacked, quite frankly. With that being said, you are a Democrat. You are saying, let's cut and run. And I have to tell you, I have been nervous about this interview with you because what I feel like saying is, sir, prove to me that you are not working with our enemies. And I know you're not. I'm not accusing you of being an enemy, but that's the way I feel, and I think a lot of Americans will feel that way.
Glenn, a lot of bigoted Americans would feel exactly as you do, you bigoted son of a bitch, because that's exactly what you are. Why do you stand there, Beck? Day after day, and say, oh, I'm a good Christian, I'm a Christian, I'm a Christian, I'm this. He's a former alcoholic druggie who's on TV because of God only knows why, wouldn't know the truth if it smacked him right in the face, stands there and says this offensive statement to a new United States congressman. A brand new United States congressman. Prove to me that you're not working with the enemy. Oh, Glenn Beck, you fool. You ignorant fool. Why is it that ignorant fools like Glenn Beck are all over the airways? Why? Does anybody know the answer to that? I think I do. I think it's because there's a lot of ignorant fools that are willing to listen to him and put credence in what the man says. That was the most offensive statement that I've heard on TV for quite a while. You bigot. You low-down bigot. Don't you sit there and tell me that you're a Christian, you're a good guy, and all this. I'm not buying it. You're a lousy, no-good bigot. Along with many other people in your party. Your party is bigoted. Absolutely. There are many, many good Republicans, but I want to tell you one thing. You start sorting through that party, you're going to find a great percentage of bigots. Why else do you hear them moaning and groaning every single day about the borders and about the blacks and about that? You hear it all the time. Bigotry. That party is full of it, and I'm so sick of hearing it from them. God, am I sick of hearing it from them. I don't know why. I don't know what would possess a guy to say something like that unless he was just, out looking to make some news, which is what Glenn Beck is probably all about. But he disgusts me. He really, really does disgust me. Well, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Yeah.
Obama is a prime suspect.
No.
Sorry, I don't know who he is. All right, you know, I just don't spend that much time on him.
Well, yeah.
I want him, you know, I want justice. Dead or alive.
No. Well,
tonight you say names and you text terrorists.
No.
Including members of Al-Qaeda.
Well,
I know I didn't say that there was a direct connection between September the 11th
no.
and Saddam Hussein. War is my last choice. We're going to smoke them out. Let's bring them on. You think Patriot Act, constitutional guarantees are in place? The wiretap requires a court order. Saddam Hussein's got weapons of mass destruction. Although we have not found stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction, and it is true that much of the intelligence turned out to be wrong, no one can now doubt the word.
Hey, and we're back here in the Guy James Show. Just about 13 minutes left. You can give us a call, you know, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Glad to have you give us a call. Yeah, I do want to make something clear. When we were talking about the impeachment just a little bit earlier, I said it was important that the political spectrum understand that impeachment isn't necessarily about vengeance, that it's about law and order and oversight and checks and balances. It is most certainly about that. But I do agree with at least one of my listeners that let me know in no uncertain terms, I think it was Billy, that there's a modicum of vengeance mixed in with that. There most certainly is. We're human. Also, going back, we were discussing the other day, we were discussing Joe Lieberman and our gal that listens to the program every day, Blue Lady, better known as Cindy. Cindy sent me an email, so how to hold Joe Lieberman in check, how to keep him from being a traitor and voting Republican. Says, have a Democratic leader tell him privately that if he dares to step out of line again, he will lose support for Israel. Says, two things, Guy. I dare you to say this. I said it. And she also says, I don't think Israel is so holy we can't discuss it. Well, I certainly agree with that. And as you know, during the recent Israeli invasion of Lebanon, I certainly made that quite clear that I did not approve of their actions there. I don't approve of a lot of their actions. And I think the United States has given them far too much latitude sometimes. Israel is perfectly able and willing to protect themselves, and I do not approve whatsoever of what went on in that last invasion. Do they have a right to defend themselves? You bet they do. Should they? You bet they should. But there's times when they've gotten a little bit over-exuberant about it, and that last one was enough for me, I can tell you that. So, there you go. Couple of interesting facts. Boy, I have so many things in front of me here. I don't know what I did with all of them. I wanted to go back to what I was talking about James Carville and the job that House Democrats did and Howard Dean did and the DNC. And of course, Rahm Emanuel, too. I'm not saying everything he did was wrong. And we've picked up over 30 seats so far. That's a great thing. But let's take a look around the country. Here's something a lot of people are not aware of. We instinctively look at all the high-profile cases and don't look at what goes on locally. In state legislative bodies, Democrats control 56 chambers, and the Republicans only control 40. And there's still two that are undecided. And the tie in the Oklahoma Senate goes to the Democrats. And if you're looking at numbers, if you're a numbers freak like I am, Democrats control 3,964 state legislature seats, and Republicans only 3,307. Democrats have new trifectas, governorship, the House, and the Senate of the state in Arkansas, Colorado. This is new now. Arkansas, Colorado, Iowa, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Oregon, bringing our total number of trifectas where we have control of all three seats to 16. Our previous trifectas included Illinois, Louisiana, Maine, Montana, New Jersey, and New Mexico, North Carolina, Washington, and West Virginia. Republicans have only 10. So what does it all mean? We have now almost entirely restocked our bench following the 1994 elections. Our list of potential candidates for higher office at every level is now much longer than it was only 6 years ago. We're in a position to favorably remake electoral maps than we were 6 years ago. And also, by taking a substantial lead in trifectas, we can govern for the first time in a long time, shifting the national policy debate decidedly in our favor. It was a sweet victory, a lot sweeter than a lot of people realize. Do keep in mind all these state legislatures. That is very, very important, and we did a great job with that this time. And back to numbers again. Pick this up. Let me see. Blah, 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 blah. The 2008 matchups, hypothetical matchups. This is a hotline Diego poll. John McCain beats Hillary 45-40%, McCain beats Barack Obama 39-35%, and McCain beats John Edwards 40-27%. But in a sign that Democratic progress may not stop with 2006, assuming the Democrats can find and field the right candidate, a generic Democratic candidate beats a generic Republican candidate 40-27%. Interesting. I will put my money on Mitt Romney right now. That's what I'll do. I'm going to look like a fool if he doesn't get it. But I'm saying right now, Mitt Romney will end up. You want a moderate? There's a guy that's moderate. Not all moderate, but I mean he's more moderate certainly than John McCain. He's more moderate than any of those other. I was going to say idiots, but well, you know what I mean. That the Republicans are going to try and run. So. But I'm saying Mitt Romney's going to be it. I don't know who's going to be ours yet, but it's going to be a long primary season. I do see that Trent Lott is back in a leadership slot. Don't you find that interesting that the President of the United States stabbed him in the back and got him out of the majority leader role? And now that they've lost their power, they put him back in a leadership role. Quite odd. It was a close race. He won, beating Alexander 25-24. So most interesting. But I was talking just a little bit ago about some of these right wing talkers like this Glenn Beck. Beck is a showman. I give him that. He most certainly is a showman. But his political views, most of the time, if you really take a look at them, are just absurd. He's an entertainer. He should be talking about something else besides politics, in my opinion. But I heard Mike Gallagher this morning. He's the one that I consider not just real bright. He's not the sharpest knife in the drawer and brightest bulb and all those little sayings. Certainly not. But now he says that maybe he's been wrong about the war. Here's a guy that Yahoo, let's send more troops, let's go to war, let's go kick their ass, let's go into Iraq, let's get Saddam Hussein, let's just do all this and do all that. Been behind the President of the United States every step of the way. And here's what I'm talking about. When I talk about hypocrisy by some of these radio hosts, we've already decided, in fact, Rush Limbaugh has already admitted that he's been a liar his entire career, carrying water for people that don't deserve to have it carried, and saying things that he wasn't comfortable with just because it was toeing the party line. We already know he's the champion liar. I mean, he was a champion liar before he admitted that. Hannity, well, what can you say? We had a term we used in school, brown noser, and I suppose this term is still around. There couldn't be anybody in the world with a browner nose than Sean Hannity. He had been right behind, and I mean real close behind, Mr. Bush this entire time. What is he looking to be, press secretary? Is he looking for a spot in the administration or what? How could you be that much of a kiss-ass? I don't know. That's what he is. But here comes another one along. Savage gave it up a couple of months ago, two or three, four or five months ago, that he started getting off the Bush bandwagon. And now we have Mikey Gallagher kind of saying, well, you know, maybe this war wasn't. Hey, you know, after almost 3,000 soldiers are dead, this is a hell of a time to stand up and say maybe you're wrong about that war. It's good that you're admitting it, but isn't the timing just a little bit off? Wouldn't you say that? Wouldn't all of you that were just gung-ho for this war, wouldn't it have been a good thing to have admitted that several years ago? But no. We had to do the old jingoistic medley there and just every day sing the songs of war and let's go kick some ass, let's nuke them. All the things we heard back then, shock and awe, beat your chest like a gorilla out in the, hey, boy, I'm tough, we're gonna go kick some ass. You know, those days are over. We don't need to act like that. Everybody knows that this is the most powerful country on the earth militarily and has been for some time now. The Cold War is over. We're the lone superpower. We don't have to beat our chest. We don't need to. There's no need to do that whatsoever. Everybody knows that we've got the military might to do almost anything we want to do. So why do these people like your Hannitys and Gallagher's and people like that, and O'Reilly's, don't want to leave him out. Just still, boys, any war comes up as a good war to some of these folks because we can do that old jingoistic thing and brag about, hey, by God, we're tough. We're real men. We'll go there and get them. Well, I don't respect that. I think real men find a way not to go to war. If it becomes absolutely necessary, you do it. And you stand up and you do it, and you do it proudly for your nation. But it's quite another thing to go to war when it wasn't necessary at all. And I can never forgive this Bush administration for doing just that. And I think in the coming days, we're going to find out. They're going to be your Henry Waxmans and your John Conyers and such people are just going to find out what maybe did go on in this administration to start this illegal, immoral war. It's going to be a tough pill for the Republicans to swallow, but they're going to have to swallow it. Say, I do want to thank you for listening to the Guy James Show today. I was glad to be back after being off yesterday, a little bit sick. Hate that word, but I was. And do want you to know that we're proud to be part of the Head On Radio Network here in the Guy James Show. Got a good lineup on this network. You're going to get good talk radio from noon on every single day. Don't forget that. Hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network, and never forget, you've heard from the radical right, now all that's left is the truth.